Right now, we're joined by Brian Ross and Real News here on Robinhood Radio. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning to you, Marshall.
And if it ever was needed to be proved locally, it happened locally this year. Two small elections, one in the village of Millerton and one the Republican primary in Amenia. In the village of Millerton, in a race for the town board, a flat-out tie. They have to do a revote. And in Amenia, New York, the supervisor's race was decided by 7 votes. And the town board, the two winners, who won seats out of the 4 candidates, were only 7 or 8 votes ahead of the people that were challenging them. And it speaks loud and clear. I don't know when people are going to learn that if you're going to complain and you're going to complain, well, you have to vote. Otherwise, things don't change.
That's right. And of course, now in New York, they're awaiting the results in the mayor's race there with a very small turnout. Maybe about a quarter of registered voters came to vote in New York.
It's a big lesson that we just never seem to learn. We all felt so good at the turnout at the last presidential election. But now, since then, lots of legislation restricting certain voting. And we seem to be back in the same old muck.
I'll say, and you talk about the significance of a vote. Of course, in the U.S. Senate, it's down to the vice president breaking any ties if they can get even to a situation where they can vote on a majority. Somehow, the supermajority, the filibuster-proof situation in the Senate, has stymied so much. As you see, there's a group now that says they have a breakthrough on the infrastructure package. They're taking it to President Biden today. We'll see if they can find a bipartisan approach when the other party really is just a party of no's.
Well, what's interesting about this, and I'm one of those people that are just damn it now. I'm fed up with this filibuster. Let's get rid of it. But the president has shown a lot of patience. He's kept his calm, and if this bipartisan package comes to the president, there's enough Republican votes there to get it passed, and that will be a very, very big thing.
Right. Political this morning is calling it President Ahab. Mr. Biden has caught his white whale. The bipartisan deal he thought he wanted appears to be within reach now at this point. They did meet. They figured out a way. We don't know the precise numbers yet, but it's about half of what he asked for originally, but it's still a bipartisan deal based on what we're hearing from the early reports.
Well, and what progressives have to learn, like if I can learn, anyone can learn it, you take that half a loaf and then you look at getting the rest of the loaf on small bits later on. But you've got to set a foundation of being able to actually negotiate with the other party to get somewhere. That's what politics used to be about.
Right, and before we get ahead of ourselves, of course, there are 20 senators, 10 on each side, have come up with this plan, but that's not 60. And so the progressive side of the Democratic Party is not so pleased about what's going on. They feel like they've been dealt a losing hand here, and the question is, can they be sold the vote?
I think that they can be brought in line and say, listen, because Bernie Sanders said for himself when he was running for president, I don't ever expect to get 100% what I ask for. Even if I get 30 or 40%, that's better than nothing. So I think when push comes to shove, it's a different caucus, the progressive caucus, than the really rebellious caucus on the Republican side. I think they'll get this done and they'll move forward and see what happens. But it's a glimmer of hope anyways on the national level.
Well, it is a glimmer of hope and an indication that, you know, there are some moderates left in the Senate. But that's 20 of them, you know, and the point that we're making here, of course, is that the progressive side of the Democratic Party has to be sold on this, that this is something that they can go along with. The White House saying there'll be a separate reconciliation-like package for what's not brought up in this package. But it does appear to be some progress by President Biden, holding firm and coming along with this idea of the bipartisan bill. So it'll be interesting to see, and we'll know in a couple hours what that's all about and whether it's going to work.
And to show what good President Biden's trip to see NATO, to see the European, the G7, and even with Putin, The UK is not going to be deterred. They're doing things in the seas. They're not going to be pushed around by the Russians. And I think that's all made possible in part by a strong U.S. president showing his strong support for the UK.
I think that's very true. And, I think that what came out of that, of course, is the continued effort by the United States to take a leadership position, especially now that the U.S. is trying to help solve the pandemic on an international basis, shipping off millions and millions of doses to countries that desperately need it. At the same time, we've got Americans here who won't take the vaccination with others around the world desperately in need of it.
All right, we can take a look at some other things around the world. What do you think about the situation in Taiwan now, where once again, they fear with what they see with what China is doing around the world. Once again, Taiwan fears that no matter how well they can defend themselves, there's just no chance in a war against China. Once again, this is where the global influence of the United States, the UK, and other countries could come to play.
Well, absolutely, and that will be perhaps the ultimate flashpoint, much as Cuba was between the United States and Russia in the early 1960s. I think Taiwan is a flashpoint between the United States and China. All that stands between China invading Taiwan really is the United States' threat that they would retaliate and support it. And would that actually happen? Would the American people support that for an island far away? You know, China maintains is one of its territories and should be reunited with the mainland, as they've done with Hong Kong. And we saw what happened in Hong Kong. You know, China is a autocratic, dictatorial-style government, and they've expressed their power and showed it in Hong Kong, and the threat to Taiwan is very, very real.
And what's sad is I'm old enough to remember Chiang Kai-shek, but I think people have to understand what Taiwan and what China and the U.S. and the rest of the world, how that all developed.
Well, of course, and because it was under Henry Kissinger, our local resident, and who initiated essentially under President Nixon a two-China policy that we essentially wouldn't talk about Taiwan, and we would understand that perhaps it is part of China without going into it. And, of course, any reference to Taiwan as a country irritates, aggravates, enrages the Chinese, who see it as one of their territories, which brought under their control again. So the United States has tiptoed around that. But we have pledged to support the country. We have made it clear the United States Navy is there and our forces to defend the country if they are invaded. But there is invasion fever and a real fear in Taiwan now about what's happening as China flexes its muscles.
And I have to bring up a story that I read about last night and heard on the BBC today. In America, the life expectancy has dropped from 80, I think it's to 78 for white Americans, and to 76%. For black Americans due to the pandemic, but once again showing the incredible difference between if you're a white American or if you're not a white American. These are staggering numbers.
Absolutely, and it all goes to the availability and the quality of medical care between people of color and people who are white in this country. And it also goes, we take a look at the this cause of death. The deaths happening now because of COVID-19 are almost entirely people who did not get vaccinated. And this is taking place in a lot of southern states where people have resisted the vaccination. It is a complete and total mystery to me how that continues to be the case. The evidence is so clear. And yet for some reason, either it's religion or it's fear of government or it's anger because of politics, that vaccination rate is not much higher, and you know we're close, but we're not where we need to be, especially in states like Mississippi and Alabama and Louisiana.
See, in the EU, where they're about to ban junk TV food announcements before 9 p.m.?
What do you make of that? That's a bit much, right? Is that a nanny state, or do you think that's a good idea?
Well, you know, there's not a, you know, Everybody made fun of in New York City when the mayor wanted to ban the big gulp and stuff like that. I think right. it's a good headline grabber, and I think Bill Maher, who hosts a show on HBO, has always said the major thing that always upsets him is how the government of the United States totally doesn't look at the health of its citizens. If you want to keep healthcare costs down, you have to have healthier citizens. So I think it's a good headline grabber. I don't think it's a thing that you can do, but I think that I think governments around the world, and especially in this country, you're looking at a guy here, or you're listening to a guy here, who's dealt with weight problems his whole life. Well, when this pandemic came around, you know what? I wanted to live. I did not want to get the pandemic. So right now, 13 and a half months later, I'm 82 pounds lighter.
No kidding. That's great news.
But people just have to understand that if you want to reduce healthcare costs, you have to be healthier and you have to eat healthier. So, but I think to try to regulate when you're going to run commercials goes a bit too far.
I would agree about that. But congratulations to you. You've extended your life by more than a decade. For years and years, you'll live longer. And I hope to remain on the air.
And the Supreme Court sides with a high school student, which they should have, because what a high school student does on their own, and when they do it, and they, it might be vulgar, but it doesn't, the vulgarity is not aimed at anybody in particular. They didn't name the school. A school has no right to expel somebody for that. And I'm glad the Supreme Court, I think it was 7-1 or 8-1.
8-1 with only Clarence Thomas objecting. And that's a real victory for free speech and the ability to say what you want away from school. And I think that applies also to away from your job. How much can you be regulated? This applies only to public schools, not private schools. But in public schools, they can't go after students because they express an opinion away from school on social media, nothing to do with school.
And it sets up an interesting look at this whole Supreme Court now, where everybody was worried about 6-3. Well, maybe it is going to be 3-3-3.
Well, you know, we've had a unanimous vote. We had a 8-1 vote. Still, some of the more contentious issues are yet to play out, and we'll be hearing about them. Probably there could be some more rulings either today or tomorrow, and a few next week. They've got some big ones still to go.
All right, Brian, always great to talk with you. Have a great week.
You too, Marshall. Great talking with you.
Brian Ross, Real News here on Robin Hood Radio. Of course, you can find Brian on our website, robinhoodradio.com. Go on demand. Click on Real News with Brian Ross.